Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine, where we cover Georgia politics like Kudzu covers the South. Bernita, you there with me?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. Well, we got a big week coming up. We have the 10th congressional race, which has been a mainstay of our program. We're going to have someone come in from the district, Peyton Bradford, and talk to us about, give us an on-the-ground report. But it's my understanding you've been in Augusta a lot.
Yep, I'm on the South Carolina side, actually.
So you've been seeing some of the media, and that's good. I'm going to welcome Tim on in, I believe.
Hello, David. How are you?
Doing good. Happy Father's
Tim.
Day to you.
Oh, same to you.
Yes, yes. Well, we were just, Bernita, I was talking, it's a big 10th Congressional District weekend. We've got, you know, Peyton Bradford coming in, and also we have the State Senate special election in the 24th District, and towards the end of the show, Scott Nichols, the Democratic candidate in that district, will be calling in for us. So we have some things to talk about. Well, the 10th District, let's kind of get right to that. Finally, the media strategies started revealing themselves just in the past, say, 10 days maybe for a lot of the candidates, and I just thought we might go through and look at some of the media that we've seen. And I guess the person that had the most money is the person that had the most media, and that would be Jim Whitehead. Bernita, I think Tim and I have seen the Jim Whitehead commercial on maybe YouTube or off his site, but you actually got to see it running. What were your impressions of that ad?
Well, I think, I believe that he and Whitehead, I mean, Marlo and Whitehead actually had the same thing, the same amount of money when you came to the TV buys, because Marlo's ads were on the same time as Whitehead. You saw, it was like 5 o'clock news happened. You saw a Whitehead ad, you saw a Marlo ad.
Yep.
Actually, Marlo's ad extended until like 7 p.m.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, they went until like around 7, 7:30. And Whitehead ended like around 6 o'clock, but those two were the only two from the 10th District that's been on the TV.
Yes, well, when I saw the spot, my first thought about the actual spot was it really made Whitehead look old. And to me, the biggest drawback, if you're a Republican-leaning voter, about Whitehead is, hey, we're going to get this guy that's, you know, I don't know his age, but he appears to be in his late 60s. He doesn't have a lot of time to stay up there in Congress and gain seniority.
Not unless they look at it in that much depth.
Well, I mean, but the Republican insiders that propped him up that were like, oh, it's Jim's time and we're going to clear the field, to me that, I mean, those people get it. I'm sure just average voter might not understand all the inner workings of Congress.
But I think when they do it like in that kind of time work, that means that they'll be able to get a Gary Black in.
Yeah.
Actually, David, in viewing the ad itself, I thought it was pretty decent. It was fairly effective for what he needed to do. He talked a lot about Congressman Norwood, almost to the point as if Norwood would have.
Yeah. And then I guess they followed that up with two radio spots, one in which Charlie Norwood's wife, that was the most recent one, endorses Jim Whitehead, and that was probably very effective at making him just a name brand candidate for the Republican voter that doesn't know a lot about the race, just saying, oh, he's the establishment guy, the safe choice, I'll just possibly vote for him. That commercial was effective in that.
Yeah, it was.
Bernita, has that spot been playing some in that area?
The radio piece, you mean? Or the Norwood piece?
The radio, the Norwood's wife radio spot.
Yes, that's been playing. So when you sort of get a double bang when you're on the radio, you hear about, you know, his wife, and then when you're watching TV, you hear him talking about his great friend, Charlie Norwood. So like Tim said, I think it's been effective. But after a while, you know, just watching one news, you know, channel one day, it kind of gets annoying. That's all he's talking about is, you know, his dead friend, Charlie.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, James Carville's mantra is, you know, when people start getting so sick of an advertisement, they're about ready to throw it up when they see it, that means it's just about getting effective. So, you know, that's kind of how media point buys go. And then the other spot that I know of that Whitehead ran was an early spot he put in. I'm not sure if it was the whole district or just the Athens area where Larry Munson did an endorsement. And I think we've talked about that ad before. It seemed very like every other Bulldog radio broadcast commercial for everything from an insurance agency to a car dealer.
Yeah, but it's Larry Munson, you know.
Yes, I mean,
it's Larry Munson. We can't undersell this. That's important, too.
It's an endorsement you'll certainly take. I mean, not that Larry Munson's the maker of all candidates, but, I mean, I guess you'd rather have it than not in East Georgia. So those are the three spots. And really, I hate that a lot of times direct mail will get scanned and put on the blogs and whatnot. We didn't get to see any direct mail because, I mean, my understanding is the Stone Ridge Group is the leading Republican direct mail firm. They were doing Whitehead's mail. It would have been interesting to see, you know, what they came up with, but I don't know if they did very little or it was targeted and just no way of getting out there to the, you know, the media sources.
I think there was something they put out about Whitehead was attacking Marlowe and comparing him to Mark Taylor.
Yes, I mean, and that didn't make it into any of the sources, you know, the Blog for Democracy, Pete Pundit.
None
of those places had the ad on. I mean, and really, I mean, I just don't know that, you know, like, oh, Mark Taylor, is he really that big a lightning rod even for, you know, Republican voters at this point to where that's that effective? So,
yeah, I was quite surprised when I heard that. I thought they'd figure, you know, we've got a lot more controversial people in our party than Mark Taylor.
Yes, I mean, you think they would try, since it's a congressional race, national politics, you think they would try to use one of the usual suspects like Ted Kennedy or John Kerry.
Cynthia McKinney.
Yeah,
that's who I thought they were talking about with Cynthia McKinney. I was like, what? And they were like, Mark Taylor. I'm like, that's even dumber.
Yes, so they didn't go for the obvious one. Well, moving on to our side, James Marlowe, I think he was in a situation where it was good to save the resources and kind of launch in the last little bit. And he had a TV spot, which was, I think the case there was, you know, they just had the photo shoot for direct mail, and so they were forced to use still frame shots that were shot by the direct mail company.
I was from the company that did it, Brickyard, and if you look at their website, I mean, they do videos for Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes.
So I was quite shocked at the quality of that ad, and that Marlowe didn't use his own voice was another shocker. I mean, like, when you see the Whitehead ad, you have Whitehead speaking, and Marlowe's has some old dude that is, you know, not a recognizable voice, and it's just still shots.
And you make a very good point there. If I'm just going to be as non-biased as I can and compare the two ads, I thought the Whitehead ad was clearly better. It was better done. More importantly, it featured the candidate himself sitting there talking directly to the voters.
Well, and really it's kind of like, say, one person's racing on a bicycle and another person's on a motorcycle. It must have been a case, and I haven't talked to anybody in the campaign about this, they probably didn't have a lot of, like, long-range planning to do TV, because I've seen these ads before where you throw up the photo shoot from the direct mail and you go through all the frames, and if a lot of times you plan it out and you do motion footage at the same time you do still footage, and the planning, I guess, early on when they did the direct mail shot was never to do for the media company to come in and do motion footage, although then why do you get somebody like this Brickyard Media, which doesn't sound like a real political firm. They seem to be more of a just general business firm that has a, you know, incredible client role. You could have had a, you know, your local cable company folks put that ad together from the pieces they were given.
And with Marlowe not having a problem with money, why would you not put together a different type of ad that might cost a little more but might be more effective?
I'm with Tim on that one, because if you're buying the same media, you know, if your media buy is the same, and, I mean, I don't know what's going to be for the next 2 days, but for the last 5 days, it appears on TV that it's, you know, the same quantity.
Yes, I mean, obviously in TV buying, points cost a lot more than production.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, I mean, as far as that goes, yeah, I mean, they could, if there was some way feasibly to put the shoot together, to do the right motion footage, and at least at a minimum, I think you could have James Marlowe speak, because we've heard him speak. He's got a good speaking voice. There's no reason why he couldn't have spoken underneath his ad.
I think that would have definitely, even if they went with the still shots, just hearing his own voice, besides at the end, "I'm James Marlowe and I approve this ad," would have gave it more personable. And I think, like Tim said, that's the difference. When you see Whitehead, it seems way more personable. Like, you know this guy. He's your grandpa because he's way old. But you kind of know him because he's actually talking to you.
Yeah. Bernita, have you heard of any ad that might be going on television on election eve, or is what we've seen pretty much yet over there?
I haven't heard of anything different that's going on. Mm-mm.
I haven't heard either, but I would assume usually...
I'm sure Whitehead will put out a new one.
A lot of times, though, you usually, you release all your ads, your main ads, especially in a race that doesn't seem to have a lot of rebuttal, back and forth. I would think all your ads have been out by late last week, maybe over the weekend. That's just general rule of thumb. And, I mean, people even speculated now with advanced voting, do you now move your ad strategy up another week because all that? So that would lend even less credit, less thought to putting a new ad out with just 2 days left. Unless you really had some kind of charge that couldn't be answered. And a lot of times that's done by more targeted media like direct mail.
Or if you wanted to buy local television time and go before the voters to appeal to them directly, that might be effective right now.
Yes, well, and the other, Marlowe had a radio spot, which has not been circulated widely, but we at the Kudzu Vine were able to get a hold of. What are y'all's thoughts on that? Tim, any thoughts on the radio spot?
In listening to, we're talking about Marlowe now.
Marlowe's radio spot.
In listening to Marlowe, he keeps coming up with these things like independent Democrat.
Thank you, Tim.
appealing on values. He keeps saying things like bringing our troops home from Iraq with honor.
Honorably, yeah.
It's a little vague to me, David, exactly what he's trying to do. I'm sure they've got a plan, but on his media spots, I'm not quite seeing what that is, how that is going to directly connect to the voters.
With the TV and the radio spot, since I guess there's just one, it's like intro spot, just to cover a little bit of everything, whet the appetite, no development, and that could be, hey, if we get into a runoff, then we can develop some issues at that point, or it could be, there's just such a compressed timeline without enough money to really develop it all.
That's fine and well, but in the meantime, Whitehead has grabbed the mantra of, hey, I'm the guy you know, the guy sitting here in this yellow shirt, in this chair, talking to you. You know me. I just think his ad's been better.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it.
Yes,
I agree.
And then the final piece that we've seen from Marlowe was one of their direct mail pieces. Actually, it was very focused. It was focused on Iraq. If people hadn't seen it, it has the background of a soldier with a mother and child holding the picture of the soldier in there that's, I guess, the husband, father, gone to war. And it talks about Jim Whitehead's statement saying the 10th District doesn't matter to voters of this district, or the Iraq War doesn't matter to voters of the 10th District, and then starts to lay out, why it is important with how many soldiers are from the 10th District in Iraq, in Afghanistan, very well footnoted. I thought that of the three pieces we've, been privy to, that was the most effective of the three, was the direct mail piece.
I thought the direct mail was good, and I would have kind of built a theme upon that across the district, so you kind of knew what honorable meant, bringing them home with honor. I thought the content of the direct mail was good. I think the layout was way too busy for me. It had like 18 different fonts on it, but that's a whole other topic. But the content of it was good, and I think, he would have became more personable if he would have placed his TV and his radio, you know, to be more consistent with his mail piece.
Yes.
Oh, I agree with that wholeheartedly. If they would have based those ads on the mail piece, it would have been a lot better.
And that may come from the fact that Mad Dog Mail is doing their mail, an in-state political firm, as opposed to, you know, the backyard media that probably just did production for them with no real, you know, ad strategy for the media.
Right.
So that probably some of the difference happened there. Well, and other candidates, you know, were pretty limited what they could do. I think three other candidates had, I guess, which, you know, viral video, YouTube type downloads. I know Bill Green's son put together one that was an attack piece. Did y'all happen to get to see Bill Green's attack piece on Whitehead?
Yeah.
It was fairly effective in what it was, obviously. I mean, it was very good for a teenager to be able to put that on together on his home computer, but as far as, I mean, how big of a reach did it have? Well, only, like, hardcore committed folks were going to know about, you know, Whitehead's flip-flops just by seeing that or going to one of the sites. But I did think it was rather effective. It did point out a weakness. Then it was exactly what Green needed to do. He needed to chip away votes from the lead Republican candidate, bring him into his camp, which for folks that saw it or heard about it, maybe like our friend Freedom Fighter, that was an effective spot.
And as we know, David, Green is dealing with a medium that he's very familiar with. For those of us listening tonight that don't know this, he has a site called rightmarch.com, and he's a grassroots activist, or a self-styled grassroots activist. He claims to have 1 million members, so he's no stranger to the Internet.
Yes, I mean, he was able to get one of the presidential candidates, he's certainly a third-tier guy, Tancredo, to come to his district and endorse him. I mean, I don't know how many votes that's worth, but it's kind of impressive that he could get this guy that was busy, you know, running for Congress to come from Colorado or Washington or wherever into the 10th district to support him.
Well, if you saw Green's ad, I know both of you did, that he made on the Internet. He said that he goes to Washington a lot. He meets with the people in Republican power circles a lot, including those on Capitol Hill. And he brought Tancredo there to the district to demonstrate that very thing.
Yeah. Well, and there were two other candidates I noticed, and I may have missed somebody, and please correct me if I missed them, that had Internet video audio, and that was Mark Myers. He had some video snippets talking about issues. If you want a guy that talks about issues, I'll give this man credit. He gets into some issues. He gets into things that from the 80s. The guy seems to love anything that came from the 80s, something called the Grace Commission and putting bills on the Internet before they're passed so people can see it, earmarks. I mean, this guy, man, he is all into policy. So I'll give him his credit there, but it just all 80s and real insider knowledge stuff. What were your thoughts on Mark Myers?
Actually, after seeing him live, he talks the same way live. When I saw him at the Augusta debate, it's the same thing. Like, you really can't follow him, and you're not really sure where he's going with them. So it sort of seemed like the same thing that was live for me.
I know what I've been able to pick up from looking at all these snippets of him, that he is running a campaign that says the GOP has lost its vision, it needs to return to its roots, we need a new contract with America, he says. And when you mentioned the 80s, David, you hit on this man. What do you hear first when you go and open up his website? You hear the voice of Ronald Reagan. And that's what this guy is all about, returning to the greatness of 20 years ago in the Republican Party. That's what he's hammering. That's what he's preaching, to a point where he sounds almost like a nutcase.
It is. It's Reagan, Reagan, Reagan. And it was the funny thing.
Isn't he the only guy who said that Reagan was the only person, he was the only one that was endorsed by Reagan?
Yes, and it's a 1988-87
right.
endorsement letter.
Right.
I mean, you know, because obviously, unless he needs to be on one of the paranormal shows that comes on Blog Talk Radio against us, you know, getting endorsements from the grave, It's that letter that he pulls out from 1987, 88, when he ran for Congress way back when against somebody. It's just kind of funny how some of these guys bring this stuff up and
well,
use it.
Three straight elections, 88, 90, and 92, he was the Republican nominee when that was the Democratic district, and he lost pretty badly all three times. He looks like a retread to the voters now, like a guy that's ran one too many times, and I just don't think they're going to take him seriously on election day.
Tim, you're being nice. I think he looks like one of those tires in the back of the store that aren't for sale. I mean, retread's being nice.
One of Whitehead tires that he sells at his shop.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, Whitehead in a tire shop. That was a retread was quite a play on words. And the final candidate that I saw that had any kind of media was the Libertarian candidate, Dr. Jim Sindelbach.
Scary.
And, yes, he had a video, an audio, and text that were all identical, so you could, you know, you could choose to read it, look at it, or hear it. And it was just the same stuff. And it was just, it, I mean, it made Mark Myers look good, I thought.
Okay, guys, I'm going to step out and say this immediately. I find it frightening that this fella compares himself to the Energizer Bunny, okay? I mean, it's just frightening.
I did see that. I did see the Energizer Bunny thing. It was strange. And then, additionally, did you happen to click on his MySpace page? This guy's got like 100 friends. I'm sitting there going, who would join up with this character? But they, I mean, apparently the Libertarian circle, they run deep. I mean, there's a lot of them, and they get all into what they're doing. And he's popular with that crowd, so that makes me wonder, hey, I mean, this guy may not be one of the two major political parties, but I'd almost be willing to guess anything that he will not be pulling up the rear on election day.
I don't think he will either. And whatever few percentage points he pulls away directly from the Republican candidates. No Democrats are going to vote for this guy.
I don't think there are any Democrats I know of that would consider voting for this character, but I don't know if that would qualifies you as a Democrat. Well, before we get to our prediction segment, I wanted to go ahead and pass along some information that Mike Cantone sent out to me. He said that they were able to, just in the past few days, the Democratic Party of Georgia went out into Athens and canvassed about 750 households just yesterday. And then they were able to make 1,000 calls yesterday, and that includes 5,000 calls during early voting and 20,000 calls overall. These are live calls, people talking to people. They've canvassed over 200 households. And he said just today, he sent me an update, that they've made over 1,000 calls today to the 10th District in about a six-hour time period. They are churning through some calls and get out the vote over at the DPG.
But, that's really great.
Yes, and if somebody wanted to volunteer, they could still do that. I'm sure that people see many sources, but if you wanted to call 678-278-2008, you could call into Spring Street. You can volunteer any time between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. on election day and Monday as well. They're going to be doing get-out-the-vote efforts. You can go to Spring Street and volunteer, or I'm sure if you wanted to go to the district, that would be possible too. Well, I think it's prediction time. Anybody want to go first with the prediction of what the race will come out to?
Okay.
You go ahead, Tim.
Okay. This is the one I sent you a few minutes ago, David, and I'll try to stick with it. I'm going to say that on Election Day, Whitehead gets 43%, Marlowe 22%, Brown 16%, Green 8%, Pascal 3%, Freeman 2%, Underwood 2%, Sindelbach 2%, Myers 1.5%, and pulling up the rear, Pulliam at 0.5%.
Okay.
I said we got a runoff.
Yes. Bernita, what's your rundown?
Oh, I was just going to go with the top four. I'm thinking is Whitehead and then Marlowe, Paul Brown, and a toss-up between Bill Green and actually Nate Pulliam. That's the Iraq guy, right, Pulliam?
Yes, but I'm Pulliam's website is so underdeveloped. I mean, he really didn't have a campaign one. It's hard for, I think, people outside the district to get a good read on him. So, yes, well, and I had the breakdown, and I actually had to rework my numbers to put Underwood in, and how can you forget Underwood with some of his stuff? But I had Jim Whitehead at 42, James Marlowe at 31, although I'm beginning to think I'm a little high on that after hearing some of y'all's predictions. Green at 9%, Braun at 8%, Sindelbach at 5%, Freeman at 2%, Haskell at 1%, Underwood at 1%, and then Myers and what's the Iraq guy you're talking about, Nate Pullingham at 0.5%. So I had both those splitting a percent. But, Bernita, I take it that you, since you're on the ground in the district, are you getting a sense that Nate Pulliam is getting more traction over there than we see outside the district?
I think when he has a much better speaking connection. And I actually think Underwood may pull a little more votes. I don't think he's going after Republicans. I think he's going after black Democrats in Augusta.
Yes. And they're probably smart. Plus, there could be some name confusion. I mean, you would think after Whitehead's media strategy, everybody would be pretty clear that Charlie Norwood's gone. But then there could be some folks that are like, you know, that Underwood-Norwood sounds kind of alike and somehow get confused. Like the
no, I think
opinion.
With his... The person he has running his campaign, she runs as like an independent. She's been a spoiler in a lot of races in Augusta. I don't think he's really going after that many Republicans. I think he's staying in black neighborhoods.
So he would then hurt Marlowe, Freeman, Pascal.
Yep, Pascal. I think more about Evita, Pascal, and more about Pascal because she's in the same area in the Augusta area.
And
but
I
she has probably more yard signs out of the Democratic candidates in Augusta.
Yes, and yard signs don't vote, but there's just they do give you a little name ID, and they're of some value, obviously. Now, the one question I have to ask, who are those people that are on Evita Pascal's website? When you go to her website, you see this family on the beach. Who are these people? I really these people, I'm like, wow, they look great. I just want to know more about them. And
that's a serious stock photo.
And I never see them when I go to the actual website, but it does get fun because there's some random floating hair in her header. I've seen hair in food, but never hair in a header.
And David, I wanted to back up for a minute and make reference to something you had mentioned. You gave Marlowe 31%. So would I in November. The reason I didn't give it to him now is a very simple one. It's June and Athens is shut down, pretty much.
Yeah.
The governor scheduled this thing this way on purpose. Everybody knows that. With the intention of keeping the Democratic vote as low as possible.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, there's no November race. Remember, it's done. July, right?
But what I'm saying, in a month like November, you know, Athens is full. In a month like June, Athens is empty, and definitely the governor had this in mind when this date was settled upon.
Yeah.
Here's a bet. Do you guys think that he'll run again in 2008 if he is unlucky this time?
Well, I'm just so excited about the field we may have running for Congress after reading Andre Walker's blog post on Georgia Politics Unfiltered. I mean, I may have Roy Barnes running it. Tim and I will have Roy Barnes running our district, so we're
I don't know who came
up
with that theory. Did you read someone else? Are you kidding me? I don't know who came up with that theory.
I'm getting excited. I mean, who are some of the other names? I mean, besides us having Roy Barnes, it was who it was, Dan Lee, former state senator from LaGrange. He wasn't he a Republican that switched parties? He's going to run as a Democrat against Lynn Westmoreland. There was more good stuff. There was a top shelf guy down there in the first.
And we're talking about running against Lynn Westmoreland.
The only
pick, I'd pick Darrell Hicks. He lives in that county. I mean, Jim Bullitt's not going to run. He's already stated that he wasn't going to run for Senate.
Yes, and the only rumor that I think we should start that wasn't on there is Kathy Cox, she moved to Young Harris. I see no reason why she won't run for Congress against Nathan Deal.
Okay, let's go through this one. 6th District, Charles Brewer. I don't think he's going
to
run.
He'll bring a lot of money to that race. Bernita, you're dismissing this so out of I'm shocked.
Mary Squires isn't going to run again. She's a lobbyist, and she likes being that. she didn't want to run for an office in the party because of those factors.
Yeah, Peg Blitch is going to come out of retirement to run against Jack Kingston. Scott's going to give up that state house seat. Scott Norwood's also looking at our district. Michael Thurman's going to give it the labor commissioner spot if Marlo doesn't win, because obviously that race would be very tempting if Marlo's unable to win. This is all tongue in cheek, but it was.
I don't think it was. I think he said this came from his tip line.
No, I think you, me, and Kim are tongue in cheek. No, I don't know the intent. With this post, but it was pretty interesting. It was definitely food for thought.
Since Scott Holcomb doesn't live in the 11th district, that might be a problem.
I thought he lived in the 5th, but
He lives in the 4th.
The 4th, okay.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take anybody we can get. Well,
he said, we'll just move.
Yeah.
They'll just run there.
Yes. Welcome to the Kudzu Vine, caller from 517. Who we got on with us?
Hello?
Hello? Whomever you are, you're breaking up a lot. Who do we have on with us? Try it one more time.
Michael Jackson.
This is not Scott Nichols, correct?
Michael Jackson. It's Michael Jackson.
It's Michael Jackson. Well, Michael, we're going to let you go right now and get back to talking politics. I didn't recognize that area code. Did y'all hear Michael Jackson is the name that was said?
I do believe I heard that name, yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure who Michael Jackson is.
Okay.
I mean, other than the Michael Jackson we're used to.
Hey, every week we get a new one.
So, well, I guess let's get back to more serious matters until Scott Nichols calls in for us.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what's been going on the blogs this week.
Well, tell us, yes. Tell us what's going on.
I think the Whitehead and the chicken had to be the funniest this week. New media kick butt this week with Shelby in the chicken suit and going to the debate was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And showing up and not seeing Whitehead at the debate. That was pretty good stuff. And the fact that he was the lead-in for Fox News was funny.
Yeah, I saw early on that there was a lot of the chicken, and it made sense. Now, I will say the video where the chicken throws the rock, I didn't get that one either. It was a little long for just throwing the rock. I think that probably could have been cut.
I think it was something that had to do with gravel, and since I don't really watch gravel's YouTube, I didn't really get it.
That might the candidate gravel, or is this
the candidate gravel, the presidential candidate. I think it had something to do with his video. It's like a play on his video.
Okay. Yes.
Let's see what else.
That makes sense.
There's a draft white ore.
Yeah.
In motion for a U.S. Senate.
And that picked up steam pretty quickly. And I'll go ahead and preview for next week. John Flack, who started that movement, he is agreed to be on our show and tell us more about that because he thinks by next week it'll really there'll be more meat to it, if you will.
Which is pretty good just to see the grassroots in action. And if it can convince White to run, I think it'll make it way more competitive. And so, you know, it's new media working out. And let's see what else was interesting. The Giornallo case and everyone pretty much hammering Thurbert Baker.
Bernita, I saw a video of Orr speaking. Was that at the event last week?
He did both for the People Rally, so I think that was the older version.
Okay.
I think that was the year before.
Okay.
And he also did. He also spoke at the North Georgia had a debate forum for party officers during that period.
Uh-huh.
And Wyke also spoke then.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
So that was, you know, I think the three topics, major topics, the Thurbert Baker was interesting. I think the media, I mean, I don't think they'll ever get away from playing the race card ever as long as there's something attached to it in the South.
Yeah, and I saw that they brought that somehow in when it was Joseph Lowery called on Thurbert Baker to resign, and Joseph Lowery's call actually had racial implications, even though both gentlemen are black, and it seemed kind of peculiar.
Well, I think, in the AP, before even Lowery got on board, the AP picked it up by saying, you know, Thurbert Baker, a black attorney general. I mean, when are we ever going to move away from that? Just say the attorney general.
Yeah.
But I think because of the South, they always have to classify everything in a racial tone.
Well, I guess they kind of wanted to show, hey, this is not, you know,
no,
white attorney general holding back the case. And you know, Thurbert Baker's reasoning, and I don't want to have a big legal discussion on the show because of normal politics, but, I mean, it was, hey, if I released him, then there would be precedent to release other true child molesters, and we can't do it quite this way. So that was
I think his point was, if we allow a judge to change the sentence in this once.
Yes.
People will use that all the time. I think it was a sentencing issue and the fact that the judge overstepped his boundaries. And I agreed with, you know, Thurbert. We can't, because we know someone. We'll use that in their trial. And I did a blog post that said, what happens when a judge decides to lengthen someone's sentence?
Yes.
Unfortunately, though, the attorney general is in a situation where he's damned if he does, he's damned if he doesn't. Obviously, as best I can see, he has followed the rule of law in this case.
I hope everyone remembers that, in 2010.
Just as obviously, people were not real happy with what he had to do.
Mm-mm. But I hope, you know, people don't use it against him in 2010, because he is one of our strongest candidates.
Oh, certainly, and I hope that doesn't, you know, cause people to sour on Attorney General Baker. Well, I guess something that happened during the week with Tim and I that wasn't for everybody's purview, we're going to share some things now. Senate candidate Del Carwell called and wanted to set up a sit-down meeting with Tim and I. And I don't think we're going to share everything on, you know, that would happen in our meeting. But
I'm upset. Am I not a part of Kudzu?
Well, he actually wanted to meet with Northwest Georgia Democratic leaders up in Raleigh.
Okay.
And Bernita, the good news is he did agree to come on the show in the future. So he was made aware of our show. I think he had some awareness, but he has a better understanding of what our show is. But, Tim, what were some of your thoughts from that sit-down?
Well, you know, it was the typical type of meeting like that, David, that we've been to 100 times. Where a political aspirant is making the rounds, as it were. He had a meeting right before ours and was going to see the local paper before that. He's a pleasant sort of fellow, very personable. You can tell this guy's been on television. He's pretty quick on his feet. Of course, we didn't agree on some things, and we shared that with each other, but he had pretty much ready-made answers, and I came away from that meeting, if not, I'm not going to say I'm a supporter of his, because at this time I'm not, but, you know, it was a decent meeting.
Yeah, I think he was genuine in what he believes, and I think, and obviously I think he did talk to us about the tax position. It's not what it seemed at first reading. He wants something simpler, but not anything. He wants to keep a progressive structure, which I think is a really important point to know that.
Another thing,
how do you keep a progressive when you come out the box
going right?
Well, I mean, we asked him, we point blank asked him, and he said that he wanted to keep a progressive structure within simple ranges, whether, you know, unless he wanted to close some of the loopholes for some of the big businesses.
Another thing you alluded to, David, was when I asked him about his position on Iraq, and he gave us this long, involved, exact answer. And I believe, as I recall, you told him, man, if you had put that on your website instead of what you have on your website, which is not a very good explanation, let's face it, people would understand his position on things like that more. Maybe this guy is the type that's better person to person than he is either in print media, on the internet, somewhere like that.
But, Tim, remember, we had 159 counties. Is he going to talk to everyone individually to get that message out?
Yes, ma'am. I understand.
I mean, like he said, a progressive structure. How do you go progressive when you came out right, completely right, and haven't veered back left publicly, unless it's a one-on-one conversation?
Well, he even mentioned the words progressive flat tax.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where that was going.
I think
he lost me.
Well, I think it's Dick Gephardt came, it may have been 10 years ago now, with some type of system that was kind of like that. I think he just, I think he's just had a lot of his Dunwoody neighbors talk about how bad they hate the IRS and just wants to use a lot of that, you know, real emotional language that a lot of the Republicans use that, you know, it's just not a big, you know, fire starter for us Democrats.
Do you win a Democratic primary by telling everyone you're for flat tax?
Well, I don't.
I'm just trying to figure out the strategy. And now, when, I mean, it's like the Kathy Cox. You're running for the general before you even get through the primary.
Well, and I think I think you may see some more talk about health care and education. You know, he mentioned, you know, putting nurses in schools and things that are more Democratic traditional issues. You know, I think he was just real adamant. He's not going to, you know, be who he's not. He's going to run on what he believes in. But I think he does need to realize that he needs to talk more Democratic issues that he has common ground with Democrats at this point in the race.
Well, what about this whole issue of not taking special interest money? That would go for unions. That would go for the teachers.
Well, we asked him about that, and apparently he's serious. He says he believes that he can raise enough money to run a statewide campaign from small donors. I've never known of a candidate that could do that, but down here at least.
Well, the larger context of it, if you're not taking, I mean, the reason you take the PAC money is because they believe that you're going to promote their issues. So
right.
If you're not taking union money, can we just assume you're not going to promote labor issues?
Well,
or you're not going to support the Teachers Association issues?
I think people hear the word PAC and they think, oh, yeah, people like, I'm not taking PAC money. But I think what people don't understand about that is, like, if a local PTA wants to give money to a candidate, that's much more pure $100 than if a trial lawyer donates $2,000. I mean, I have a problem.
I can't agree with that one. Because, you're running statewide. You have to get the Teachers Association because they have, what, 30,000 members?
Right.
So you don't seek their endorsement because you can't take their money, apparently, if that's what you start off as.
Well,
or even the unions. So you don't go to local 1414 in Savannah because you're not taking their money.
And he indicated to us that he has already started to walk down that road, and even though he says that some of these organizations obviously are very worthy organizations and will get his vote in the U.S. Senate, that he's made the deliberate decision that he is going to take no special interest money. And for some reason, when this guy says he's not going to take any special interest money, I believe him. I believe he's sincere.
I can believe him on that, but what I don't get is, do you not agree with the special interest? Do you not agree with the principles of the labor movement? And will you not promote the labor movement is my problem. And how do you solicit votes from the labor group?
And would he accept their endorsements?
They wouldn't give an endorsement if a guy says he's not taking their money. I'm sure they're probably wondering, does he even support our issues?
Well, and I think the way Richard Ray was quoted in the paper, you know, he sounds good on some things, and some things we're kind of shaky on. They're taking a wait-and-see approach. If it ends up being no, 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 and I don't think a lot of people, when they say, oh, money, they don't realize they're talking about labor unions. That's not really what they're
no, If you go look at the top 10 PACs who's given money, you see SEIU.
Well,
you know, you
know
see every union, and you see every teacher, and you see the National Teaching Association.
People don't think that, though, they're novices. I mean, not everybody's going and looking on FEC.gov and breaking down the numbers like we do. So these are people they're not as informed.
Well,
The only thing that worries me about all of this is this. I left that meeting the same way I came into that meeting. I wonder who Dale Cardwell is. I wonder where he is on the political spectrum. I don't know.
I think he's kind of all over the place on different
issues. He is.
I will say that. I don't think he's all right or all middle, or I don't think he's left on much. I'm sure it may come out that we find a thing or two that he is.
It's beyond that. With me, I know that he tells me he's a Democrat. I just,
can't feel it in the court.
Yeah.
You don't got that gut feeling there, Tim.
I don't know. I don't know what to think about him.
Yeah.
I don't.
I mean, there's still more to hear, definitely. There's no doubt about that. Well, I'd assume Scott Nichols was going to come on in, and he still may, get in before the end of the show. But, Bernita, since you're in the Augusta area, and that's where that special election's taking place, do you see any kind of activity going on there?
Nope.
I'm shocked. I mean, apparently.
See, Whitehead used to have some billboards up. They're not even up anymore.
Yeah, I'm not.
He's the first one to go up on billboards.
Who
I mean,
was that?
Whitehead.
Uh-oh.
He had billboards up 2 months ago.
No, Whitehead, this is the seat he's vacating, the state senate.
But even if you watch. No, it was Whitehead for Congress.
Yes. And so,
but even if you watch the news, in the past, 4 days, they haven't really even talked about it.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
No.
And I'm kind of shocked not that you didn't see it, but just that there's nothing going on. Because if you look, you look on Peach Pundit, more of a Republican blog, where they're more apt to talk about it because they have three candidates that apparently are more running more vigorously and are spending more time in the state. And you just don't hear anything about that side of the race, and so you begin to wonder, it's like, how interested are people in the whole process in general if they're not any more interested in the number two race?
I think Whitehead got some press last week because of the meeting at MCG, and they're still thinking he's their senator. But, yeah, he got some press because apparently he set the meeting up while he was still in his Senate role. So he was like on the front page of the meeting was on the front page of on top poll.
Yeah. Now is he backing anyone?
Is he in the Senate?
And for that state Senate race, three Republicans.
I haven't heard. You want to talk about quiet? That state Senate race is even quieter than the congressional race.
So there's no gauge or indication how that thing's going to turn out. I don't really even know much about the district. I take it it's a decently solid Republican district, although I hear that it's...
It has Columbia County, which is, right next to Richmond, and that's strong Republican.
Yeah. How much of Richmond does it have?
I don't know. I think it maybe only have, 25% strong Democrats, and I could be wrong on that one.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a heavy one.
What about the three Republicans themselves? Are they each strong enough to split the Republican vote and perhaps force a runoff, do you think, in that race?
I have absolutely no clue about that one. I think, you've got three Republicans in a strong Republican area. I think you will get a runoff in it. I just hope our guy is up there.
Yes. Because our guy, and just to let everybody know, because I don't want everybody to think Scott just stood us up, he had a flight from Atlanta to Dallas, and then from Dallas to Tucson, and he had just a little bit of layover in the Dallas airport, and he was going to try to work this call in, but, you know, with airlines, he may be up in the air right now wanting to call, but just no possibility to. But, you know, he's, he apparently is a civil engineer and stays very busy with that job. So, yeah.
So he's going to Tucson or he's coming from Tucson?
Going to Tucson. I guess he had the weekend here in the district and then had to go back out for work with his job.
Bernita, let me ask another question, either about the congressional race over there or the state senate race. Sometimes in these special elections or these little quiet elections, one or two of the candidates will utilize mass mailing right at the end before the vote so that his opponents can't answer it to try to swing some votes. Has there been anything like that going on?
Not as I know of.
Boy, that really doesn't make any sense there. That would be one of the first things I think I would think of to do.
Yeah.
The Republicans may be doing it, but
I
don't really know that many Republicans to know what kind of mail they received, Tim.
Okay. And I get the sense.
I'm a little exclusionary.
I get the sense that they're just not real well-developed candidates on their own right. I just get that the three guys are not as sophisticated as, say, Jim Whitehead was when he probably ran for state senate. So that's just impressive.
Probably not. I think they know that they'll get a Republican.
Yeah.
I think that's the consensus. At least they know they'll get one. And there may be some guy that, you know, Jim Whitehead is quietly backing. I think the truth will come out on election day and we see whose signs are next to each other at the polling locations.
Working together. And
mm-hmm.
So you do think one of these three guys is Whitehead's hand-picked successor?
Yeah.
And that,
because they take that pretty heavily, especially in Columbia County. I mean, they have a really strong Republican Party.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Well, as we're coming towards the close of our show, Tim, do you have a outrage of the week for us?
Well, let's talk for just a moment, David, about our two U.S. senators. We all know that a few weeks ago, Senators Isaacson and Chambliss were seen on TV with Edward Kennedy as they were taking credit for helping to put together a deal on an immigration bill. Of course, they did not expect the reaction that followed, a massive negative backlash from their own supporters. Now, suddenly, we see that both of them are having a sudden change of heart. Oh, it's a miracle. Well, no, actually, it's not. It's cynical is what it is. And I bet that both of them now vote against any bill that comes forward. Next year, Saxby Chambliss has to run for re-election. There are rumblings that he will face formidable opponents in both parties. I hope he does. Georgia deserves better. I'm sorry to say that I'm ashamed of who my senators are. They're not concerned with solutions for the future, only elections next time. And another Republican outrage, Dave.
Yes, another good one. And I guess that's one thing that with some of the other news we didn't get to cover is the rumor that Saxby Chambliss may face Republican opposition, which would just be wonderful for our cause. The state rep, Chip Rogers, I believe his name, is
right.
He said
right.
That he would not run. But there's a guy named John Knopp who challenged Tom Price last time. He may run, and I think that's what it's going to be. It's going to be somebody that has nothing left to lose, probably a little bit of a maverick.
He's kind of crazy.
Yeah, somebody a fruit nut, you know, somebody pretty out there. That's going to be the kind of person that challenges him. Maybe somebody credible enough to do some real damage and make him spend some real money. I just can't imagine that a candidate could actually take him out in the primary. I mean, I guess the best-case scenario maybe would be a Matt Collins, which is he's become kind of a professional runner lately, but he could carve out, you know,
it's funny.
Maybe
it's
Paul Brown will run.
It's funny who gets interested, though, David, when suddenly a nomination might be worth having.
Yes. I think a candidate, you know, if the Republicans are all mad about immigration and how Saxby Chambliss followed, you know, Bush and didn't stand toe the line, a great candidate might be Bill Green, because that seems to be what he's run on for Congress. He could just take that thing to a bigger stage and take that little show on and have the son doing YouTube videos, and it would be great to have somebody to put his name on.
Yeah, and if his million member group there will send him $2 or $3 a piece, he's in business too, ain't he?
Yeah, well, I
don't think he's friends with them anymore, Tim. They had like some kind of power tiff issue about Bill Green, you know, using the money that came in to fund his other friends. So he had some. He's got some baggage there.
Yes, I heard. Yes, some, and I kind of think a million people in his group. I'm sitting here going, I was a little suspect of that. I mean, he tries to make it like it's MoveOn.org, but I mean, if this guy had MoveOn.org in Georgia, he'd be a true power player and not a bit player, which he seems to be.
And Chip Rogers, for a guy that's not running, certainly is talking a lot, certainly is being interviewed by the Atlanta papers a lot, certainly is the subject on people like Neil Bortz's radio show a lot. I wouldn't write this guy off just yet.
Well, there's nothing.
People keep telling you they're not running, all of a sudden they are.
Well, there's nothing wrong with raising your profile, which is what he's doing. Well, I hadn't, the last 2 weeks we've had busy shows, I hadn't had a recommended media, but I'm going to have one this week, and I've been on it probably 2 hours today already, called redistrictinggame.org. It's a computer game in which you have fictional characters on the website at redistrictinggame.org where you can make your own redistricting plan, but you have to meet all type of different scenarios. You have to have it population match. Then you have to have a match keeping people happy in the state legislature. You have to, you know, meet the voting rights provisions on one segment of it. It's a fascinating way to look at redistricting. It gives you maps that you can manipulate. I think for any political junkie, it's a great activity to learn a little bit with. So I guess we're coming to wrap the show up. Next week, John Flack's going to come in for us, tell us about the draft WICOR movement. We're going to have a report on how the 10th district unfolded. We can review that, wrap it up. We're also going to have somebody come on in, Grayson Daughters, and talk to us about the effect of viral video and YouTube video on the race, since it really was used a lot in this race considering how big it was, and give us a review of that and much, much more. But another great show, guys.
Okay.
All right. See y'all next week.
Good night.
I'll see you next week. Bye.